All right. This podcast is brought to you by Osseo Gear. Osseo's gear is some of the best hunting gear for whitetail. There's a ton of great products out there. I know there are. I wear some of them, and they all have good purpose and a great place. But Osseo was designed for bow hunters by bow hunters. There are unique characteristics to it. You should check it out. It is a great line of quiet, warm, and functional gear for whitetail hunters all over the place. So my 2023 recap, I'm going to take two different ends of the spectrum and talk about them. I was a brand new hunter a year ago. I picked up my first bow in May of 2023. I had farted around with this idea of hunting back in November of 2022. For any of you who watch and listen to the podcast, I coached football for a very long time. This was the first fall I had not coached football in quite a while. And there were a number of things that made me look at hunting. But I think one of the things that actually made me think I could do it was I had a meeting with Bert Soren for lunch back in November of 2022. Bert pulled out, I think it was Hunt Stand at the time, showed me all these different things, which, you know, to you guys who are hunting all the time and now to me seems like a normal part of the process. But at the time, for somebody who wasn't doing this, it seemed like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you can track all this stuff. It seemed completely daunting. Like, there's no way I can learn this. So I spent the next 5 months probably watching every YouTube video I could get my hands on, bugging the crap out of Bert, bugging the crap out of Joe Miles, who owns Osseo and who's one of the most accomplished bow hunters around. And I just studied it. And then I finally got a bow that I ordered in March. I think it arrived at the end of May. I spent the entire rest of the spring and summer shooting anywhere from, you know, 40 to 60 arrows a day with the idea that come fall I was going to whitetail hunt, even though I had no clue, you know, how to do it other than stuff that I had watched and people I had talked to. So fast forward, and when you talk about two ends of the spectrum, I literally got my ass kicked in South Carolina the whole season, but I had a great hunt up in Southern Illinois and shot an amazing 8-point that was around a 150. It hasn't been scored technically yet, but the rough scoring on it is right around 150. So I'll talk about getting my ass kicked first. Obviously, if you've never hunted before and at 55, you're basically going into the woods. You know, I didn't have anybody take me in, right? I didn't grow up with a dad who took me hunting and, you know, said, don't do this, don't do that, do this, do that. I literally learned everything by doing things wrong the entire season. I still, you know, I'm a season in and I feel like a complete noob still, although I know things that I didn't know 6 months ago. I picked a piece of property that I was able to lease that was about 100 acres, luckily, because somebody knew somebody. It was about an hour drive from my house, but at the time that I picked it, didn't know what I didn't know, right? So now, looking back at it, the way this property laid out was there was a long finger of tree line, mostly scrub trees, with a ditch in the middle of that finger, which you would think that's a great travel route. But the problem is there was root systems exposed all through it, and deer really couldn't travel along it other than for a few feet. So they had to cross over it. This was an ag field, which this year will be corn, but last year was cotton, which during the season when the plant was green, there's a little scrub that grows up at the bottom of the cotton plant that deer like to eat. So it was a decent food source for part of the year. But there was an area in the middle of it that was wooded mostly with pine. It was high canopy, and it ended up being a travel route is what I figured out, essentially. There was a decent family of does that lived there in that area, or at least traveled in there quite a bit. Sometimes they would bed in there, but it wasn't a very large area. It was circular. One side of it butted right up to a pretty big country highway, two-lane highway that had a lot of semi-traffic, but on each side of this piece of property that was shaped like a V, there was a two-lane country highway with heavy, heavy woods on each side, which is where the deer were bedding. Now, I look back at it now, not a great selection. There's a swampy area north of there that's got better habitat, better bedding. That's where I'm going to hunt this year, but this is what I ended up choosing because it was the most readily available at the time that I made the agreement with the landowner. So here's where we start is, A, how do you find these things, right? I had not run trail cameras all spring and summer because I didn't have the piece of property. I didn't actually get access to the piece of property until about the beginning of September, which was 2 weeks after deer season started. And in South Carolina, gun and deer season run concurrently from August 15th till January 2nd. So there's never a time, I think I said gun and archery season run concurrently. There's never a time when these deer are not pressured by gunfire. The minute hunting starts, they are being shot at. So we don't have the luxury in South Carolina of having a month or a few weeks where we can go after these things without them being pressured. So they're spooky from the get-go. And I had to figure out where they were. Well, they weren't living in there. So it took me a while to figure that out. There was sign in there, so I was wondering or hoping that there were some living in there. But what I really figured out is I got cameras out starting in September, a few in the beginning, and I eventually had about six out in this area. And I basically figured out that it was a travel route between these two big wooded areas. There were some trees that dropped acorns. The deer really like to eat that scrub at the bottom of the cotton plants. And there were some deciduous browse in there. So they would come in a lot at night, but I really didn't get many daytime pictures of anything, which obviously challenged number one. So, you know, I would go out there, set up in different areas, not really know what I was doing or why I was setting up anywhere other than I had seen something on a trail camera nearby. But stuff just didn't show up during the daylight. South Carolina is a bait state. So after a while, I decided I was going to start baiting and I started throwing corn piles out. Well, you throw corn piles out, deer are going to show up. But they were pretty smart and they didn't show up during the day. They showed up at night. I would get pictures of the deer sometimes during the day, but in all transparency, you know, I'm not the guy who's out there hunting every day. I own a company. You know, I'm traveling sometimes. I've got kids. I'm like every other guy, right? I'm not the guy who's, you know, hunting every day and has the time to go out and, you know, have four different stands up and kind of sit a different one every day based on the wind and know that something's going to show up at some point. So I was trying to, you know, hunt based upon temperature changes, playing the wind the right way, things of that nature, along with baiting some certain areas. So I did get deer to start showing up. It was almost all does. I really didn't get any bucks on camera other than a couple button bucks and a forky. And then all of a sudden, I knew I had does, and so I knew bucks would show up at some point when the rut ran around. So in South Carolina, the pre-rut started around the first or second week of October. I started seeing some buck activity second week of October, and it gradually got more and more as the month went on. I did not have any luck in any of my sits. Most of the buck activity was happening at night. I was getting very little daylight activity. And around the end of October, beginning of November, I started to get some daylight activity. And so I had one sit where I was in an area that I had baited. I had located a funnel where they were coming from across this wooded area where there was a timber operation. They were trucking timber in, and they were actually processing and cutting timber there. And there were it was really loud starting around 8 a.m. every morning. And what I would notice was that the deer that were bedding over there would kind of transition through this area in the morning when the noise started. And so after I had started baiting that area, I had set up in a tree based upon the wind that I thought was a good location. And it was the first time I had ever seen a buck daylight or even a buck in front of me. And a good sized for South Carolina, now keep this in mind, South Carolina deer are very different than deer in the Midwest. But for South Carolina, it was a nice sized 8-point. Came right in from the road. I didn't see him coming across the road. All of a sudden, he just showed up, which, you know, as a new deer hunter, that's happening a lot to me. But unfortunately, based upon where I was, as he came across and he was feeding across, there were multiple trees. And the shot that I wanted, I kept waiting for him to come through and clear the second tree, which was about 22 yards away. And if he had just fed straight, I would have had a shot on him. But he got to that second tree, which had a fork in it, turned to the right, and just moved on out. He was cruising. You know, there was food in there, so he was eating a little bit, but he was really cruising does because of the doe activity in there. So that was my first sighting of a buck. It was exciting. I was super stoked. And as a new hunter, it was like what I had been waiting for. That happened in early November. So I had hunted for almost 2 months before I had gotten any kind of a buck in front of me live. But it was enough to fuel me and keep me going and get me excited. I did not have any kind of buck activity for about the next 2 to 3 days. And then I noticed that same guy show up 2 mornings in a row right before daylight. So on the third morning, I went in there. I set up in a different tree. And I went in very early because he had been showing up pretty early. I was in that tree by 5:30 in the morning, 5 or 5:30. It was pitch black outside. This was before daylight savings time, I think. So maybe it was October. I can't remember the date. But I was in the tree for about 25 minutes when I heard a couple sticks snap behind me. Now, this was not coming from the road. This was already in the thicket that I was in. And I turned around and looked behind me, and it was so dark that the only thing I could really see were the white of his antlers. They were very white. I couldn't see his body at all, but he was walking behind me, and he walked directly underneath me. I had 3 decent sized corn piles out in this thicket, and so he fed right underneath my tree over to these corn piles, and it was 1, 2, 3. The first corn pile was about 13 yards away from me. The second one was about 16. The last one was about 20, 21 yards. And so it was 30 to 35 minutes before legal shooting light. And obviously I couldn't see him to begin with, other than his antlers. And it was not legal shooting light. So I had no really hope that he was going to stay, honestly, as long as it was till shooting light. But he literally just stayed and worked on these piles forever. And so at about 7:10, which that was sunrise was, I think, 7:12 that day, 7:10, and I really couldn't hardly see anything. He was on the third pile and was close to finishing it. Legal shooting light hit at 7:12. I had pulled my bow back 2 different times at this point just to see if I could pick him up in my peep. Not because I was going to shoot him, but I was just waiting for legal light. On, I think it was around 7:15 to 7:18, he was finishing that pile, and I knew that I was basically, this was going to be my shot, right? He was either going to feed out, and I wasn't going to get a shot at this guy, or I was going to try to set something up. So he finished that third pile, and he was moving. He was quartering away, probably, I don't know, maybe 40 degrees. It was a good shot at about 22 yards. And he stopped because I had spread some corn out outside of the pile, and he was just kind of picking away at it. I pulled back, and I still really couldn't pick him up in my peep sight, honestly. He was dark. He was like a gray, dark gray deer. He wasn't really brown. And his white was mostly underneath. He didn't really have much white on his brisket. But I was really just trying to pick up the white of his belly. And my thought was, okay, if I can pick up that white at all, then I'm just going to put the pin just a little high, and I'm either going to hit him right in the pump house, or I'm going to miss. And so that's what I did. I pulled back. I thought I maybe could pick up some white. Quite honestly, it was really, really still hazy. I let it go, and I put it right underneath him. He jumped, ran about 10 yards, turned around, stared at me for 10 seconds. But he was, at that point, straight on facing me at about 32 yards, wasn't comfortable with the shot. He walked perpendicular to me, which would have been a great shot, but he got behind a big old tree at about 28 yards. I was hoping he was going to walk out from there. He stayed back there for probably 7 or 8 minutes, and then he turned and just kept that tree in his butt and walked back into the thicket the opposite direction. He was gone. And that was it. I never saw him again in daylight. He daylighted one more time on camera when I wasn't there. The rest of the time he showed up at night. There were some other bucks, not nearly as good as him, that showed up. I kept trying to hunt him the rest of the year. I was hoping I might, you know, get a glimpse of him, in the second rut. He really never, ever showed up in daylight again. And he really didn't even show up on the camera in that area again. He really only showed up in a funnel from the thicket over to the other side of the thicket, which after a while I went up and I set up over there a couple of different times trying to hope I would get him. I didn't. It was all does, never got a buck through there. And that was my South Carolina story. So shut out in South Carolina with a lot of hunting and nothing to show for it other than I got a lot of learning out of it. The pro side of this story is I have family in Southern Illinois. They are farmers. They have a lot of land. And my cousin has a setup on about 110 acres where my aunt lives. They've got about 8 or 9 stands already set up there, and they do not gun hunt it. They shotgun hunt it for 2 days at the end of the season, and the rest of the time only he and his brother bow hunt it. So it is nice territory. So I went up to Southern Illinois on, I think it was around November the 11th or 12th. It was a Sunday, so if I got the date wrong, I'm sorry. But I was packed up the night before. I left at 3:30 in the morning from South Carolina. I drove all the way through. It was about 10 hours. I got there in time to go get up in a stand around 3 o'clock in the afternoon and get an afternoon sit-in right on the, I think it was the western edge of the cornfield with some wooded area behind it. And my cousin was set up kind of in it. So I was here kind of along the side. He was at the corner over here about 40 yards in from the corner. He kept texting me, and he sent me pictures of 3 different bucks, 1 6-point, 2 nice 8-points that came by him, and they all went by him and fed out into the corner of this cornfield. The guy who was leasing the property and was farming that cornfield, it had been full, and he had just come in the day before and cut out 8 rows, which was amazing because it was prime feeding opportunity for these deer. So I could see them coming out, and from where I was sitting, this was, you know, 150 yards, but I could see him with my binoculars. And I saw more bucks in that sit than I had seen the entire year in South Carolina in person, which was a sign of good, that sign of things to come. So that's it. I never got a shot on anything, but I saw a number of deer. It was exciting. It's an amazing property. It's in the middle of, there's farmland everywhere. This is one of the, you know, if you don't like flat farmland, it's not for you. But my grandparents lived here. I grew up spending a lot of my summers here. It's one of those kind of magical places personally to me that when I go back there, there's all this nostalgia that comes back. I just have these feelings of kind of being back home. And I love farmland. I love Southern Illinois. I love Missouri. And so I was excited to be there. I saw a deer. I was super excited. The next morning, there was a stand in this property. The field runs like, let's see if I can get on the camera. The field runs this way, right? And where I was seated was over here on the other side of the field that night. But I went around the corner where the deer were coming out, and I went halfway down the back end of the field, and there was a creek that ran off the field edge about 10 yards. It was about 10 feet deep as well. I crossed the creek, and on the other side of the creek, there was a stand facing the field edge. It was probably 20 yards from the field edge. And that was what I was going to sit the next morning. There was a prevailing wind in from the edge, from the field, into the stand. It was a great morning setup. So I got in there early in the morning. I set up. I saw two young bucks, two forkies, come in pretty early in my sit and kind of play around underneath me and just chow acorns for 45 minutes before they took off. And then I had a couple does walk by, and they were all coming from this side of the field edge, right? They were all coming like this from the opposite side of where I'd set up the night before. There was another corner over there that had been cut, and the deer were coming from that corner. So I just kind of noted that in my head because I knew that there was a blind set up in the middle of that circular corner where my cousin had shot a pretty nice buck about a month prior to that. So I was set up in the stand. I had been there a couple hours, and I saw a nice 8-point coming along the field edge from the same area with a young but a good-looking 4-point behind him. And that 8-point was probably a 3.5, 4-year-old. And so they came along the field edge, and they were going to cross the creek, literally probably 10 yards from my stand. And, you know, as luck would have it, they decided to cross exactly where I had crossed. I had crossed downstream a little bit, thinking that, you know, anything that crossed, there was a path right there. And I kind of figured if I crossed before that path a ways, I would be safe. But they kept going and literally crossed in the exact same place that I crossed. So he took, as he started to come towards the stream, he took about 3 or 4 steps, and he was halfway down the bank towards the creek when he just stopped and, you know, went on full alert. Obviously, he'd picked up my ground scent. As he started coming in that area, I had reached to the left to try to get my bow. He was not paying any attention. I had my bow halfway across, and when he stopped, I stopped. And so I'm holding my bow with an outstretched arm, frozen. He's on full alert. He's scanning everywhere. He looks up at me multiple times, doesn't see me, but obviously I can't move. And so at this point, he checks everything. I mean, he's literally like sits there for probably 3 or 4 minutes. My arm feels like it's about to fall off. He spooks, but he just turns around. Him and his pal turn around. They start walking back the exact same way they came in. And he'd walk slow, you know, but he was constantly looking in my direction. I didn't ever feel like I could move my arm. I kept waiting for a chance to move my arm and just get the bow back in. And they kept scanning. He got about 30 yards walking the other direction when I thought I had a chance, and I finally let my bow back down because my arm felt like it was about to drop. And the young guy picked me off, and they just took off running. So I didn't see anything else that morning, but it was a great sit. The wind that afternoon was really swirly down in that creek, and it was going to be really warm. I think it was November, but that day was going to get up to like 65 or 66 degrees, which was so unnatural for Southern Illinois that time of the year. But with that being said, I tried to think to myself, okay, you know, where's going to be my best chance on a warm day? So the direction that all these deer had come from that morning was a pretty, I don't want to say secluded, but it was a protected corner of the field that went back off the field edge. And it sat up against a heavily wooded area with a railroad trestle behind it. And I knew, having talked to my cousin and e-scouted, that there was a big, heavily, densely wooded area on the other side of that railroad trestle where a lot of deer bedded. And they would come over that track, walk up the bank, come down the bank on the other side, and feed into this cornfield. So I had gotten some lunch. I went out that afternoon. I think he had a redneck blind, and it was on a wooden platform that was sitting up about 8 feet in the air, literally right in the middle of this circular corner of the cornfield. And I got set up in there around 1:30 in the afternoon. That blind was hot because the sun had been beating down on it the whole day. There had been no clouds in the sky. And I got in there and I had been dressed for, you know, what I thought was going to be later in the afternoon. I get in there and I literally had to strip down to my underwear, take my top off, my shirts off, my, you know, my hoodie off, pants off. I'm sweating just like an absolute pig in here. And obviously there's nothing going on right now. It was a good choice to sit there because there was about a 12 or 13 mile an hour wind that afternoon. And the wind was swirling in that corner. And the wind would have not have been in my favor, but I was hanging out, kind of checking. I knew they could feed in from the area. I thought they were going to come, but then there was another other side of the cornfield where there was kind of an area where things just kind of went in. And in that area, it's sometimes they would feed in. So I was kind of rotating back and forth on my chair, one side to the next. Around at this time, it was getting dark. It was dark there at 4:40. They were on Central Time. And so around 4, you know, the sun had, we were getting down into dusk. And about 4 o'clock, 3:50, something like that, a doe had fed in there, was hanging out for a while. She was aggravating me because I thought, you know, she might, you know, if I spooked her, she might, you know, potentially cost me an opportunity somewhere else. But long story short, she eventually fed out. And it was around 4:10 or 4:15. I had been swiveled over to one side looking. And then I swiveled back to the other side, did what I had been doing for the last 3 hours. And there's a really good sized buck who's probably 10 yards into the cornfield. And he's feeding right on that edge. He was a nice size 8-point, really a pretty, like really pretty. He didn't have a really wide spread, but he had a really pretty, his main beams like came up almost into like the bottom part of an hourglass. They were really, really round and he had super long brow tines, a really cool looking deer. When he fed into that corner, he fed in at about 42 yards. I had measured all the way around that corner. I'd ranged everything ahead of time and I kind of knew where I wanted him to be. You know, my first season, I had decided, and based upon my practicing, I felt like I was really good out to 35 yards. Like I could keep a super tight group. At 40 to 45, it loosened up a little bit. And so in my head, 35 was kind of where my limit was. But I knew that if he came in and just fed around that edge, that I was going to get him, you know, to about 32 to 33 yards. And, you know, I was in one of those redneck blinds that just had these small oval-like windows. And, you know, he was doing what I was hoping he was going to do. He would, you know, step two or three steps, put his head down, feed, take two or three more steps, put his head down, feed. And he just kept working his way around. And I just kind of kept doing the same thing. And when he got about 8 to 9 yards from where I wanted to take the shot, when he put his head down to feed, I lowered the window. I had been keeping the windows up as long as possible just to make sure that I minimized any kind of wind in this situation. And as he took the next two or three steps, he fed one more time. I knew the next time he was going to be in my window. So as he fed that time, I drew back. And I just settled in where I wanted to be. Now, this is only the second time I've ever taken a shot at a buck. So keep that in mind. But obviously, I immediately felt my heart rate start to climb. You know, I started getting what a lot of people had described to me, like, hey, the first time you see a really big one and you know you've got a good shot, like it's going to be hard to control yourself. So I, as somebody who's been an athlete my whole life, you know, not just football, but competed in triathlons. I've done a lot of competitive activities. I recognize when that's happening and I kind of have a coping mechanism with my breathing. So I settled my breathing down, took 3 deep breaths through my nose, got my heart rate back under control, and he fed right where I wanted to him to. And as he put his head down, I settled my pin. He was right at about 33 yards. I put that middle pin on him. I let it go, and it was amazing. Like, for me, I was ecstatic with the shot. I put it right behind his front shoulder, right where I thought at the time was the heart, or at least to the backside of the heart. I got a pass through on it. To be honest with you, I remember everything up to the shot. I remember everything after the shot. I remember nothing in the shot. I remember pulling my bow back. I remember settling my pin. I don't remember letting the arrow go. I don't remember what he did when the arrow hit him, but I do remember him running at full sprint about 10 yards, stopping perpendicular or parallel to me, and then walking directly into this thick brushy area because he was going to cross the creek. I saw him walk into the area. I heard him go down the creek bed, which is about 10 feet deep. I saw him come up the other side of the creek bed. He stood there for 3 or 4 minutes, and then he walked about another 8 to 10 yards, and he bedded down. Now, you got to keep in mind at this point, this is the first deer I've ever shot, okay? So I know I've shot him. I know it's a good shot. Everything everyone's taught me and everything that I've learned is you don't rush in there in the deer. So I'm sitting in the blind. At this point, the adrenaline, everything's caught up to me. Like, I'm like a flood of adrenaline and can't believe it, right? So I'm like, and I'm watching, because the whole time I'm just watching him because I don't want to lose him and I don't want him to get up and move and I miss it. And I certainly don't want to chase him. It's really dusky at this point. I barely could see him lay down in bed. I sat there for probably another 40 minutes before I climbed down out of the blind, and I went over, checked my arrow. I had really good blood on it. I had, a little bit of bubbling on it. My cousin, who had just got back from work, pulled him, I texted him and told him, hey, I've got one. He said, bring it up here. Let me look at the arrow and we'll kind of decide when we go back in to get him. So I brought it up. I had to walk all the way out to the other side of the field, which took me about 15 or 20 minutes. And then I took the side-by-side back up to the house. We took a look at the arrow. He's like, oh yeah, he's dead. So we take the side-by-side back down. It's my first time tracking a blood trail, which was, super fun. And really, I was kind of like, this entire experience for me, right, was first time for everything. And quite honestly, I almost couldn't believe it, because so many people told me, look, the hardest thing to do is hunt with a bow. And like, don't even expect to shoot anything your first year, right? Maybe you'll get a doe, but don't have that expectation. The weird thing for me is, just because I've competed in sports my whole life and I've built businesses, I've been competitive, like, I always expect more for myself than people tell me what I should expect. So I had expected at some point during the year that I was going to shoot a deer, right? And shoot one that I wanted to shoot. But I didn't know when it was going to happen. And I didn't know what it was going to look like. This was something beyond what I could have imagined. So we had an amazing blood trail. Like, literally within 5 yards of him being shot, we started to pick up really good blood, large pools. We were getting blood on some of the plants that were about 4 feet high. So we knew that he was spraying. We saw good bubbles in the blood. We tracked him down the ridge or down the bank, across the creek, up the other creek, got to the top of the other creek. Good blood, a nice pool of blood where he had stood. And then he was 10 yards further down, right where he bedded, is where he, died and perspired. So I was really thankful. I had spent, and everyone had told me, like, hey, if you're going to hunt with a bow, you have to be prepared to make an ethical shot. Like, you can't take that for granted. And so for me, I had to make sure that, that's why I spent so much time shooting the whole off season. That's why I would shoot 40 to 60 arrows a day. Like, I knew if I'm going to do this, I have to do this the right way. I have to make sure that when I take a shot, it's a good shot. When I take a shot, I have a high level of confidence that I'm going to put it in the right place and that I'm going to give that animal a good death. And that, honestly, is the thing that I'm the most proud about around this whole hunt, is that I had set parameters for my shot. I shot within those parameters, and that buck perspired within 30 yards of where I initially shot him as the crow flies across the bank. And he had a good death. At that point, now it was he was a big deer, and we had to get him down a 10-foot bank, up another 10-foot bank, and then into the side-by-side, because we didn't gut him in the field. The house is just, you know, about a quarter mile up, and so then they had a nice setup in the barn where we could, you know, pull him up and gut him hanging up. So that's what we did. We got him in there. My cousin, he had to go take care of his kids, but my other cousin, who is a 16-year-old girl, has been gutting deer her whole life. She's the one that actually does all the deer work for the family. She's a great hunter too, and she was the one that taught me how to gut my first deer. So I had been dying to use my Montana Knife Company Blackstone the whole year, and I gutted my first deer, which, you know, if you've been hunting your whole life, that probably sounds stupid and like, oh, you know, hey, I've known how to do that since I was 10. But all these things that I've learned how to do in the last year are so exciting to me because they're things that I never thought that I would do. You know, a lot of people are like at 55, they're like, I want to retire and I want to go lay on the beach or whatever. Like, that's so not me. Like, I don't want to work as hard as I've worked my whole life, but I want to continue to challenge myself. And these kinds of things are so exciting and challenging for me because I'm learning an entirely new skill set. I'm connecting with nature in a way that I've never connected with before. And my respect for these animals that we hunt is a respect that at such a high level, I just can't even explain it. The experience that I had in this season in hunting and getting my ass kicked in South Carolina and then going up and hunting and killing an amazing animal within 2 days of being in Southern Illinois, tracking that animal, gutting that animal, getting the meat prepared, and now feeding on that animal, you know, a few months later, is I could never have dreamed that it would end this good when I started on this journey 14 months ago. And so I'm so thankful to everyone in this community that has helped me. You know, people have been on this podcast who don't know me at all. People like Josh Smith, Dan Staten, Trail Kreitzer, Bert Soren's a friend of mine. He's been on this podcast. But I've had people on this podcast who don't know me at all, but who are willing to share information with me. Bert and Joe Miles have tutored me and mentored me through this process in a way that has been so helpful, I can't even describe it. So I'm so thankful to this community. I'm thankful for the experience I had this year. It was amazing. And like I said, it was both ends of the spectrum. I got my butt kicked, and I had the best experience hunting and killing a nice 8-point in Southern Illinois that I could ever have. It was the entire spectrum of the hunting season, and I'm super excited for next year, and I'm right now preparing for an elk hunt out west next fall, and that's what I'm looking forward to now. So for everyone that listens to this, I greatly appreciate you downloading the podcast, watching it on YouTube. Thanks for following my journey, and there is a lot more to come, and I will continue to share it with you. Thanks, everybody.